You and I together for a brand new week, Monday, December 11th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We featured a chat with Quinnipiac University Associate Criminal Justice Professor Kimberly Preslowski on an estimated 1,500 drivers from out of state who took part in massive street takeovers in North Haven and other areas. Sacred Heart University Communication and Media Studies Professor Dr. Bill Usman joined us to talk about the reinstatement of Alex Jones' account on the X social media platform, and I had a few thoughts on recent congressional testimony from college presidents regarding campus anti-Semitism. All right, we'll get back to open phones momentarily, and when we do that, it'll be a 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Yeah, you know, we all grew up. Maybe some of us did it years ago. We heard from our parents. Yeah, we had friends or family members who used to drag race or take over streets or go cruising. It happened a lot on Long Wharf in New Haven and, you know, on the Grasso Boulevard. But over the past couple of years, one of these phenomenon, or the new phenomenon relatively, are these street takeovers. And we saw a few of them locally here, 50 or 100 people, Post Road in Orange last year and into and through East Haven and New Haven. But I don't know whether you heard about this. Saturday night, Universal Drive in North Haven, right off of Exit 9 there, 1,500 vehicles, 1,500 vehicles showing up at Universal Drive. Cops say spectators from multiple states showed up. No offense to North Haven, I mean. I've known the first selectman there for years, Mike Frieda. Mike, love you, but I don't get, and they went to Shelton, too, and I guess parts of West Haven, whatever. So you show up from five states? Cops from North Haven, Meriden, Wallingford, Hamden, West Haven, Brantford, State Police, North Haven Police. Yikes. So joining us right now to try and make some sense of this is an assistant professor of criminal justice, Kimberly Preslowski, from the criminal justice program at Quinnipiac University in Hamden. Professor, hi, it's Paul on WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm great, Professor. Thank you. And, you know, yikes. I mean, you know, okay, 10, 50 knuckleheads, a couple of hundred for a few minutes. When I saw 1,500 showing up, I thought it was a typo. It wasn't. What is going on here?
Yeah, so this is, as you said, relatively new phenomenon. It kind of started out on the West Coast in San Francisco area. And during COVID, we saw a huge uptick in street takeovers, ultimately because the streets were void of both vehicles and individuals. And now it's growing to be a huge issue, not only in the state of Connecticut, but overall nationally. We're seeing these pop up and ultimately cause a lot of problems in our local communities.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Professor. I mean, if you want to go to a cruise and talk about your cars and everything, I mean, that's been part of Americana since, you know, the Model T's rolled off the line here. But these gatherings now are so big. I mean, they clog up, you know, emergency vehicles trying to get somewhere. And it really does become, you know, beyond, I think, I could be wrong here, a public nuisance. It becomes a public hazard.
Right. And so we're trying to be more stringent and strict in terms of law enforcement, as well as some of the legislation that has passed recently regarding ultimately enforcing and making sure that these individuals know that they are, you know, causing a nuisance and they have great disregard for the law. But overall, we're seeing that the spike in social media has allowed for them to kind of grow the capacity in terms of how many individuals can be, you know, partake in these types of incidents. And then ultimately, you know, the stunts that they pull, the, you know, donuts, whatever the stunts actually consist of, they all gain a lot of traction on your Instagram accounts, on your TikTok accounts. And so that's been really a huge driving force with regard to this issue.
So part of it, I would think, criminologists or criminal psychologists, Professor, would say that it's kind of a big muscle flex here. It's like, hey, we can get so many people in an area in a relatively short amount of time. You can bring all the cops you want. There's still going to be more of us than you.
Right. So it seems like we're one step behind, unfortunately. The police shortage nationally doesn't help us, and even here in Connecticut, You know, we don't have enough personnel to be boots on the ground in all these locations that are prone to these types of incidents. So law enforcement has been trying to build up task forces using also different types of crime prevention techniques. And ultimately, now it's become more common for law enforcement to start leveraging their innovative technologies and trying to, you know, stay a step ahead of these individuals partaking in this kind of activity.
Yeah, and I know, Professor, that law enforcement is kind of hesitant to say what they're doing, but do I guess correctly that part of it may be some high-tech software, algorithms, AI, sniffer software that can detect the use of language and raise an alert here to officers?
Yeah, so there's absolutely artificial intelligence involved in some of the soft technologies that law enforcement agencies use. And as you said, it can pick up on keywords that often pull from social media accounts. Agencies have also started to kind of create these centers called real-time crime centers. So they've been proliferating across the state of Connecticut and nationally. Now, these centers, they house different technologies such as your typical, you know, surveillance cameras, so your CCTV, but they also house LPRs, drones, and other GPS systems. And so LPRs, we sometimes think they don't really have great utility with these types of incidents because, unfortunately, most of the individuals who are involved are committing these acts without actual legitimate license plates, mm-hmm. right? So when yeah. we come to think about a license plate reader, it doesn't have much utility. But we have found some success in the state of Connecticut using GPS tracking devices as well as drones. But of course, you know, those conversations are a bit difficult just because of the controversy surrounding kind of privacy and what that looks like for that, you know, for law-abiding citizens.
Yeah, and Professor, finally, I think, and this is just my opinion, you know, just me saying this, I think the maybe lack of effectiveness in using the LPRs, the license plate readers, may be actually corrected and improved by some of these people, Professor, who are, and this is me saying this, not you, dumb enough to put their photos and their videos on social media to say, look at me. I guess, Professor, they don't understand the theory of, you know, facial recognition software. I mean, when I was growing up, if somebody broke the law, well, we couldn't do it. But, I mean, you sit there and go, what are you doing? So all of a sudden, some of these people, you know, in a week or two or three are going to actually wonder why they were caught. To me, it just, you got to sit back and laugh sometimes.
Right. And to that point, just quickly, with the new laws that are being passed in a lot of states, it doesn't require police presence for there to be for the individual to be caught or prosecuted. Mm. All you need is video surveillance of that individual committing the act. And then, you know, that's supported by either a witness or, as you said, facial recognition. And so it's been a huge help in terms of enforcing these kinds of laws.
Thanks once again, Professor Kimberly Preslowski. She's an assistant professor of criminal justice, criminology at Quinnipiac University in Hanman. Professor, thank you. We'll chat down the road. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. There you go. Professor Kimberly S. Preslowski, assistant professor of criminal justice at the Quinnipiac University in Hanman. She's had published work in peer-reviewed journals. She has authority and instructs courses in the areas of policing and research methods within the Department of Justice and Law. Her expertise in policing rooted in her practical experience as a criminologist with the Miami Police Department. So there you go. 1,500. Police say drivers and spectators from multiple states showed up around 8 p.m. to participate in the takeover. Drivers and spectators lined Universal Drive, forcing holiday shoppers to be stuck in parking lots, says here on Channel 3, with no way to leave. I-91 was backed up in both directions for over a mile. Officers from North Haven, Meriden, Wallingford, Hamden, West Haven, Brantford, and state police had to come in and assist North Haven police. Police say the event made it difficult for emergency responders to respond to calls on Universal Drive, including a medical emergency and an assault. Again, nothing in and of itself at all negative about North Haven. I live one town north in Wallingford. It's fine. I have friends in North Haven. I know the first selectman over the years, but really? Look, I know I'm an old guy. I understand that. I don't think the way the youngins do with the fancy schmancy cars. But you're going to come from out of state to take over Universal Drive in North Haven. And by the way, if you don't know that area, it's not waterfront property. It's you don't go to Universal, with all due respect to the fine folks in North Haven, you don't go there for a romantic moment. Universal Drive is I-91 exit 9. You get off there, depending upon the areas that you're going. And when you come over the road there, there's a Home Depot. There's a pretty nice Cinemark theater. There's a McDonald's there on the right. What am I missing? Oh, there's a pretty good, I think the Barnes & Noble is still there. What else? There's an old electronics store there. I'm not sure what that is. Then if you go to the left, there's a Planet Fitness down there. I'm just kind of trying to give you the lay of the land, as we say, to figure out why. And again, I understand that there were cruises and drag racing years ago for people who love their cars, but that's not what this is about. This is a big flex of people saying, hey, we can outnumber the cops. Well, you can that night. But with all the license plate readers, which I think there should be more rather than less. I know people get nuts with me. Oh, you should have privacy. You have no privacy when you're out in public. You don't. Hence the terms public versus private. So they think they're getting away with something until, you know, in a couple of weeks where they run your plate or they check your GPS. Now, that's interesting, too, what she mentioned. I didn't know they were using GPS, meaning, you know, your cell phone puts out a ping, especially if you have what are called the location services turned on. So my guess is the police, the state police, local police, they may be using pretty much the same technology that you and I can use. You go to Waze or Google Maps or Apple Maps, and you know how if you go to the map and you see the red line on the road, you say, oh, geez, there's traffic there, or there's got to be construction. I'm going to not go that way. Well, guess what? They may be using that to see if people are converging, say, on one site or another. All right, thank you, Thunder Throat. Appreciate that. Back to open phones in just a bit when we go back there, and I'll have a couple of more stories today. 203-333-9422 will be the number, 203-333-WICC, right here, of course, on WICC 600 AM, 107.3 FM, and online at WICC600.com. It's been in the news all day since this morning, nationally and locally. Alex Jones, who I have no time of day for, but it's an issue that has to be discussed. Getting his account reinstated on X, which used to be Twitter, and I know a lot of you folks are not on the social media platforms, but Twitter, or X as it's called now, has been losing some users and revenue, but it's still massively influential, and there have been other platforms set up, but still X is near the top. And the question begs, should this guy have access, or people like him? Or it's a speech question. To what extent is freedom of speech carried over to basically private social media platforms? And is this the kind of thing where you can despise Alex Jones and people who follow him with every fiber of your body, but understand the need for free speech. Or should people like Alex Jones and other people, some people say this, the former President Trump, be kept off social media? Joining us to talk about that, a communication and media studies professor from Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, Dr. Bill Usman is on the line. Hey, Dr. Usman, hi, it's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. Thank you for inviting me on.
Great to have you with us. Does this surprise you? Now, Elon Musk said, who upsets a lot of people just because he is who he is, he said, hey, right. I put this to the X users, and it was 70-30 in favor of letting him back on. I'm all for free speech, so let's do this. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's not surprising to me at all because, you know, this is very consistent with how Musk has treated the platform since he bought it. He claims that he's a free speech absolutist, although that's really questionable in terms of criticism of him and how he treats his own critics. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that is something that he has claimed. I would say that there are at minimum two reasonable schools of thought about this question of Jones and others like him having free reign on social media and the internet. And you alluded to this just now, Paul. The first is that Jones has a vile history. You know, fabrications, probably the one that most upsetting to people is the claim that the Sandy Hook school shootings were just a government hoax. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this led to all kinds of harassment of the families of the victims. But he also spreads disinformation about other things, COVID, the 2020 election. He's accused public figures of being Satanists and pedophiles. And he does this not in the interest of free speech, but to advance his own brand and business. And he's made hundreds of millions of dollars from that stuff. So, you know, one school of thought is he's a destructive force in the media environment. He contributes to serious social problems by spreading propaganda and pitting people against each other. And so, therefore, he should not be allowed to just use these platforms to spread lies and deceit and hatred. That's one position, which I do think has some merit. Mm-hmm. You alluded to the other side, though. In the interest of free expression and an open society, we have to learn to tolerate this sort of presence in the media environment. And once we start picking and choosing who has access, we're in the business of deciding which ideas are acceptable and which must be forbidden. And that's the hallmark of authoritarianism rather than democracy. Not to mention the fact that it's a futile task because we can never fully expunge noxious ideas from public discourse. You know, they'll always find other platforms or other ways to advance their own interests. And in some ways, denying them access just might give them sort of the alluring veneer of martyrs to the cause.
Yeah, and you know, Dr. Usman, it's interesting. Whenever this comes up, whether it's politics on either side of the aisle or people like Alex Jones, it's interesting because although, you know, I'm a free speech absolutist, you know, hence being a talk show host, unless anybody uses vile language and I dump them, I pretty much let everything go and try to, you know, engage people. But you know what? It's not like 30, 40, 50 or 100 years ago where if you had somebody doing this and he was, and forgive the term, every town had its local nut, its local weirdo,
sure,
who would stand on the corner with pamphlets and leaflets and scream at this stuff until the cop said, okay, come on, let's get you some help. And they said, okay. But now, you know, Professor, it's you can say the worst thing, and with a click of a mouse or a tap of your phone, it's all over the world. And that's the thing that I, you know, as much of an absolutist as I am, I'm like, yikes. You know what I mean?
Right. That's why we have to take this really seriously. I agree with you. You know, if nothing else, social media is an amplifier. And like you say, it allows ideas that might once be, you know, confined to a geographic area or to however far someone could reach with a sort of, you know, pamphlet that they were cranking out on a home printing press. Now, like you said, instantaneously, millions and millions of people around the world, and it has, you know, it's amplified these problems. I like to say that social media didn't create lies. It didn't create conspiracy theories. It didn't create hate speech,
mm-hmm.
but it does help to amplify all of those things.
The guest, by the way, Dr. Bill Usman, he's a professor of communication and media studies at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. Dr. Usman, any time I talk to somebody who actively teaches, I always ask them the reaction of students here and how they perceive this. What do you say? Not necessarily the Alex Jones case, because this just broke,
mm-hmm.
but in general, do you find your students are in one of two categories? Is it anything goes, or get the bad people off, or are they conflicted sometimes?
I think students are conflicted just like everybody else is. You know, students who themselves have been subjected to hate speech, they are more likely to say, yeah, excuse me, this stuff does cause damage, and it's harmful, and it can sometimes spur violence. But then I think we also have lots of students who do kind of feel like there should be an open environment, and that, you know, sometimes students will just say, I don't know why we take this so seriously, because, you know, the people who are just saying these silly things, they're just entertainment anyway. I mean, Alex Jones is an entertainer more than anything else. And the problem is, you know, entertainment can be a double-edged sword,
sure.
and it's not harmless entertainment. You know, it is entertainment that is meant to spur people on and to elicit sort of our grossest sort of passions against each other.
Yeah, I mean, if we go see the horror movie, that lasts for 2.5 hours, and then our eyes are blinded by the sun when we walk out of the theater, and we say,
right.
oh, okay, that was just a movie, now I got to go home and go to work. But social media allows us to live it 24/7, if it affects us that way.
That's right. And you know, nobody in the horror movie is telling you, and this is true, right? Nobody's telling you, not only is, you know, Freddy Krueger real, but he also lives across the street from you. But some of these people, like an Alex Jones, they're actually identifying individuals. You know, one of the, you know, silliest or most bizarre things that Alex Jones has done is, you know, claiming that certain public figures were Satanists or were pedophiles with absolutely no basis for action. And there's been some bad reactions to that that have created violence or have come close to creating violence. So, you know, it's too easy to dismiss it as just entertainment.
Absolutely. We thank Dr. Bill Usman. He's a communications and media studies professor at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. And this debate obviously will go on and on for many years to come. Dr. Usman, thanks. We appreciate it. We'll have you back on the show down the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. My pleasure.
Appreciate it. Dr. Bill Usman, who is a professor of communication and media studies at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. Go Pioneers. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. It really is a double-edged sword. I mean, honestly, think about that. Years ago, we always knew, now, you know, a lot of us, it was in our family, but not necessarily, but people you knew, right? You knew of somebody in your city or town who had a home printing press, or, you know, when home computer printers became chic, and like Microsoft Word 1.0 or the Word version or Word, but whatever that came with Windows Basic. You know, hey, I can crank it. Look at this. I don't have to go to the printers anymore. I could crank this stuff out at home. And you knew people who, some of them, it was benevolent. Hey, a pamphlet for the high school football game, you know, coming up this weekend, or you know, your favorite Chinese or Mexican food or Italian food place. Hey, you know, you could print flyers or specials at home and put them under windshield wipers. If we get 2 or 3 people out of every 10, that's good. Well, it's way beyond that now. And even people who would leave, you know, whatever religious based or politically based folders or pamphlets. Yeah, you looked at it and you tossed it. Well, because you knew, oh, yeah, this is the guy on the other side of town. He's a right-wing nut. He's a John Birch guy, or she's a left-wing nut. She's in the Communist Party, the People's Workers Party, whatever. Now, I mean, think about that for just a minute. You could be a Class 1 AAA nut job. I mean, you could be on every sort of medication. But if you hide it well, you could sit down there in front of your nice big PC or Apple screen there, or on your phone. And if you're good at social media, you can say the most vile stuff. And through Facebook and WeChat and TikTok and Twitch and Instagram and Twitter and all that, one click of the mouse or one little tap on your phone. And some of the most vile stuff on the planet you could say is now literally around the world. Assuming somebody has free and open internet access on the other side of the world, they can get that. So it's a difficult conversation to have. I mean, years ago, oh, yeah, that's just that nut. He's nice. He got injured in the war, and now he puts the pamphlets out, take one by his stoop of his house. I mean, all right, you fell. Now somebody can have all sorts of hatred or paranoia or something, and it can be around the world in a millisecond. It's amazing yet frightening. All right, so how about we start out this week on this Monday, the 11th of December, 2023, with a little helpful game. Remember we were in school and we would hear a scenario, and the teacher, the mister, the missus, the miz, the nun, the brother, the priest, for those of us who did that Catholic school thing for a long time, they would say, okay, now let's apply that scenario, Mr. Pacelli, or Ms. So-and-so, or Mr. So-and-so. And what am I talking about? Well, let's, we're going to play a game in a bit, but I want to set things up for you. I want to set things up and talk about how perception and reality are often two different things, but are often the same thing. You may have heard over the weekend, now I wasn't here last Friday, took a few day afternoon off. Thanks for Chris Williams holding the fort down here with the news, and we had some of the best stuff, so we're back live this week. So last Friday, Saturday and Sunday, you may have heard the name Liz McGill in the news quite a lot. She was one of the three university presidents, along with Claudine Gay of Harvard and the president of MIT, that were asked to come before Congress and talk about what their schools are doing to protect students, faculty members, workers, paraprofessionals, anybody at that school who happens to be Jewish or is Israeli by birth or practices Judaism as a religion because of everything that's going on in the Middle East with Israel and Hamas. And by the way, Israel, as you just heard at the top of the hour, they're not going to stop. So everybody who's on the bandwagon of, oh, unilateral or bilateral ceasefire, we have to end this. Well, guess what? Israel doesn't want to end it because they were attacked, and now they want to take out Hamas in the end, but we'll get to more of that later. So last week, Liz McGill is there with Claudine Gay of Harvard and the president of MIT, subjected to some pretty intense questioning, not just by Republicans. And this is one way that the mainstream media, the people in my business who tend to work for the networks and don't want to let loose with their opinion on anything, which is fine. They're trying to play it down the middle. And the narrative so far has been, well, it's only Republicans. Well, no, it's not, because I'm going to play you a montage here of Republicans and Democrats who at least have some questions about Harvard and Princeton and MIT, and they're just some of the worst offenders. I mean, some of these schools now that allow this stuff, you know, are taking some major heat, not just from people who do talk shows or people whose kids are going there, but donors. This is starting to cost some of these schools money. So I want to play you this now. You're going to hear Liz McGill. Now, let me preface this, and we'll get to our little game momentarily. Let me preface this by saying I did not edit this together, and this is an edited 2 minutes and 51 seconds. However, this was put together and posted on YouTube by the political website Politico, which if you check out Politico, it's got some good coverage. Politico is far from a right-wing website. In fact, if anything, they are criticized by many on the right and even some people in the center of being too left-leaning. So I did not put this together. So let me tell you that up front. But I did searching around the internet, and I thought this was illustrative here, and I thought Politico did a good job of balancing this out. Now, this is an experiment here in Tone Deafness 101. Now, you're going to hear the following people. Before we get to our little game here at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. You're going to hear Elise Stefanik, Republican congresswoman from New York. And now the left hates her because she's setting up, gotcha questions. And here's my response to that. If you know you're going to sit in front of a congressional panel that may be hostile to you, come up with better answers. Assume you're going to get attacked and don't sound like an idiot. So you may say, why did Liz McGill have to step down as president of Princeton? And I guess she's going to go back to teaching there. They got to find a new president, whatever. When these presidents leave, they very rarely leave. They go back to teaching, which is fine. Elise Stefanik, then Liz McGill, then a Democrat, Congressman Don Norcross of New Jersey. Then a Republican, Jim Banks of Indiana. Then a Republican, Virginia Fox of North Carolina. Then we wind up with a Democrat, Democratic Congresswoman Sue Wild of Pennsylvania. So let's start off this before I give you your little assignment and ask you a very a very obvious question. I think you'll know where this is going, but here it is. Liz McGill, the soon-to-be former president of the University of Pennsylvania, late last week, in case you missed this, not understanding that perception is reality when you sound like a fool.
At Penn, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's rules or code of conduct? Yes or no?
If the speech turns into conduct, it can be harassment. Yes.
I am asking, specifically calling for the genocide of Jews, does that constitute bullying or harassment?
If it is directed and severe or pervasive, it is harassment.
So the answer is yes.
It is a context-dependent decision, Congresswoman.
It's a context-dependent decision. That's your testimony today. Calling for the genocide of Jews is depending upon the context.
If the speech becomes conduct, it can be harassment, yes.
Conduct meaning committing the act of genocide?
Penn announced plans to host a Palestinian rights festival that was going to be held in September. And given that the ADL identified many of the speakers, I believe the number was 25, as anti-Semitic, this continue to happen. Did you have the power to stop this event?
Under our approach to academic freedom and free expression, Congressman, we have probably thousands of speakers to campus every single year. Many of them I disagree with. I don't cancel or censor them in advance of their arrival to campus.
Why did you invite Roger Waters? What did you think you would get out of him?
Prior to the event, I issued a statement calling out the anti-Semitism of some of the speakers at that conference.
Specifically Roger Waters. Yes or no?
Roger Waters is among them.
We have a short video that we'll play now that shows what these students are facing.
Did you see that video as an example of hate speech or speech that would incite violence?
That video, just as a human being, was very hard to watch, calling for Intifada, global revolution, very, very disturbing. I believe at a minimum that is hateful speech that has been and should be condemned. Whether it rises to the level of incitement to violence under the policies that Penn and the city of Philadelphia follow, which are guided by the United States Constitution, I think is a much more difficult question.
Well, I'm going to give you one more opportunity for the world to see your answer. Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's code of conduct when it comes to bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
It can be harassment.
The answer is yes.
All right, now, and none of that was made up. That was a mashup put together by the folks at Politico. That is a center-left publication. Now, here's our little, and you can call up if you have any thoughts on this. I don't know whether to laugh or cry. I don't. But here's our little exercise, boys and girls. Do you think for 1 minute, if instead of speakers and protests calling for intifada and a rise up against Jews and many advocating violence toward Jews, despite the fact that she said, well, that can be harassing. It's a content-dependent decision. Oh, my God. Content-dependent decision. Now, here's my question to you, and think about this. Here's your assignment. If this was, instead of being pointed against Jews, which is bad enough, if this stuff, imagine this same stuff was pointed against African Americans or Muslims or transgender individuals or gays and lesbians. Do you think for one solitary second, now come on, do you think that Liz McGill at Penn, Claudine Gay at Harvard, any of these other idiots that run these major schools, do you think that they would sit there in front of a congressional panel, which, like I said, was a bipartisan panel, House members, Republican and Democrats, do you think if somebody said, President so-and-so of, you know, Squat Thrust University, do you think that a call to send all blacks to Africa or to eliminate all transgender people, do you think that is protected speech out of the Constitution? Now, do you think that any of those people in today's society on Monday, you know, the 11th of December, 2023, are they going to say, well, Congressman or Congresswoman or Representative so-and-so, that's a content-dependent decision. Really? Do you honestly think that they would say that? Can you imagine? And I'm not for curtailing speech. But, and by the way, if you watch the video of this, it's not just the sound of this. Whether you watch Claudine Gay's testimony, this testimony from Liz McGill, the testimony from the president of MIT, who run these places. These aren't mid-level professors. These aren't department chairs. These aren't provosts or people on the board of directors or board of trustees. This is the CEO of Penn saying, well, you know, it's kind of a content dependent decision. What? And this shows how dumb they really are. And I hate calling people dumb. But when you watch this, you say to yourself, couldn't you prepare yourself for a better answer? Congressman, what I hear on our campus in these protests, frankly, can I just speak as a human being here? Is utterly disgusting. I hear it, and it makes me cringe. Some of the things, unfortunately, that I hear from students and people who attend these protests, I cannot defend. This is subhuman stuff. My job, however, is to make sure that that speech, as hateful as it is curtailed, but also we have some free speech parameters remaining on campus. There you go. Fixed it for you. But the fact that when you ask these people, and yes, they're very book smart, I don't know, do these people get any media training? Do they? I've done media training for people before. And one thing I stress is perception is reality. Don't put your hand in front of the camera. Don't yell no comment into a microphone. But my God. So that's why you heard the name Liz McGill. Because when they asked her, hey, you know, this stuff about an intifada against Jews and from the river to the sea, well, that according to her, that decision as to whether that violates any sort of code of conduct as harassment or bullying is a content-dependent decision. They're actually saying, look, I'm only saying what the lawyers told me to say.